Good morning. Hope you've all had a great week, and I hope you're ready for the new week to come. I wanted to talk this morning about the position where we are right now as a church. A church, a flock, without a shepherd. And we're going to do that by looking at the life of Joshua, as Joshua had to take up a mantle to be the next leader of Israel after Moses passed. So every 4 years, our country has an amazing opportunity to elect a new president. With this change in leadership, the people tend to wonder, what will this administration look like? How will they lead this country? What changes will they do? We question the candidate we voted for, wondering, how will they lead this country? Some people worry because the candidate they voted for didn't get in, and they question every decision the president makes. And then in 4 years, we do it all again, watching political ads, watching debates, knowing exactly who we're going to vote for, and then going to the polls to vote, and wondering and hoping the person we elect, or the person we voted for, gets elected. Today as a church, we will soon have a new leader, a new shepherd to guide this flock. Someone to look to for guidance when we are lost. But we're wondering how this new pastor will lead us. Will he lead us well? Will he make the right decisions? How or will our church change because of his leadership? And some are missing Tyler. He's had a great, amazing opportunity for him and his family to go to Oklahoma and serve at a new church. But he was here for 5 years, and it's hard not to miss them. But God already knows the outcome of what will happen. He's already picked the next pastor for us. So this morning, we're going to look at the life of Joshua and how God molded him into the leader the nation of Israel needed so that he could lead the people well during times of uncertainty. We're going to see how the Israelites responded to this change of leadership. So when we first see Joshua, he is already in a leadership position. In Exodus 17, Moses says, "Choose some of our men and go out and fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." Joshua had already started out as a leader in the sense of a military figure. The people were already willing to follow him since Moses told Joshua, "You go out and pick men that you want." So the men of Israel, the fighters, were already willing to go and follow Joshua. He already had their respect. Joshua's foundation as a leader started long before he took charge over the nation of Israel. God was already molding and preparing Joshua for that leadership role that he will take 40 years later. After this first appearance, we see Joshua would become an assistant to Moses. We see this in Exodus 24 and 32 as he goes up to Mount Sinai. As Moses gets the covenant, he's the only person to go up with Moses. And though he doesn't go all the way up to the peak of Mount Sinai, he follows Moses to about halfway, and he waits for his mentor to come down. In Exodus 33, Joshua is the only person to actually stay in the tent of meeting. This is a tent where God and Moses would communicate. The tent of meeting was a place where God's presence was. While the nation of Israel were traveling, God's presence would come down as a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. And only when that pillar started to move would the Israelites know it's time to go. And Joshua wanted to stay as close as he could to that tent, as close as he could to his God. In Numbers 11, Joshua was eager to stop two men from prophesying within the camp because he thought they were in the wrong. Only Moses should be prophesying to our people. These men are wrong in doing so. Moses quickly corrected Joshua, saying, "No, Joshua, I would rather the whole community prophesy. Let the men speak the words of God." And this shows us Joshua still had a lot to learn. He wasn't perfect. he still had things to learn from Moses and things to learn from God. Then in Numbers 13, we see another big moment for Joshua. So in Numbers 13 and 14, Moses sends out 12 spies to go survey the land of Israel, one from each tribe of Israel. These spies were to look at the produce of the land, and they brought back a huge, huge bundle of grapes to show the people. They were also to look at the people of the land to see what they were going to deal with when they went and took the land. Those 12 spies came back. 10 of them gave a bad report. We can't fight these people. They're huge. They're descendants of the Nephilim. They are terrifying. We cannot. We are going to be like grasshoppers to these people. We can't take it. These 10 spies were stirring up the fear, making the people long to go back to Egypt, a land where they were in slavery, longing to go back to a place of normalcy. Scaring the people and making them forget the promise that God had made them, a promise that they would inherit that land, a land that was promised to their ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. However, two of the spies, they gave a positive report. And one of those spies was Joshua. He had an opportunity to bring the people to their right mind. We'll see in Joshua 14, 7 through 9, Joshua says, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And he will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people or of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." We see that Joshua says, if the Lord delights in us, he will give us this land, which the Lord already delighted in them. He'd already given them the land through the promise. All Joshua said is, don't rebel against God. Remember that promise. Remember what he will do for us. The Lord is with us, and not to fear the people. Unfortunately, the people did in fact rebel due to the negative report of the 10 spies. And so the people's punishment was to wander in the desert for 40 years until everyone from the last generation who had doubted God and rebelled was killed off. All except Joshua and Caleb. Fast forward, we get Numbers 27. God tells Moses that Joshua would replace him as the leader of the nation of Israel. What's very telling of Joshua's inauguration in this chapter, there are three main components that we see of people acknowledging Joshua as the leader. The first is Moses himself. Joshua's mentor, the man who Joshua was assisting. Moses asked God in Numbers 27, verse 16 and 17, "Let the Lord God of spirits of all flesh appoint a man over the congregation who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them into that congregation of the Lord." So the congregation of the Lord may not be a sheep that has no shepherd. What I liked about this passage is, one, he's asking God to appoint a person. He's not saying, Lord, give me wisdom to give this person leadership. He's asking God himself to appoint a leader for the nation. And then in verse 17, we see this language of, when I was reading it, I was like, this is exactly what a shepherd does. Someone who will go out before them and come in before them. Who shall lead them and bring them in, lead them out and bring them in, and so that the congregation of the Lord will not be a sheep that has no shepherd. That's what a pastor is supposed to do. They go before us. They lead us. We follow him. When we are in sin, he helps lead us out and he brings us closer to God, and he is our shepherd so that we have guidance and we are not like a sheep who has no shepherd. So God tells Moses to take Joshua and present him in front of the entire nation of Israel and to give Joshua his authority. The reason for this was so the people of Israel would follow and obey God. They are seeing their former pastor, their former leader, give the authority to the new leader so that they can be like, this is legit. Moses has led us so far, but his time's coming to an end. We need to lead this. We need to follow this new leader. Though Joshua has been Moses' assistant, Moses may not have realized it, but God put Joshua in the position he did so that he can learn from Moses, so God can mold him, and so Moses can teach Joshua everything he needs to know before he takes the title of leadership. The second component was Eleazar the priest. Joshua was handpicked by God to lead the people. We see the high priest laying his hand on him and being a confidant for Joshua. This shows that this decision was God ordained. It wasn't just Moses saying, you know what, Joshua, we've worked well together. You go lead. No, this was God saying, all right, Eleazar, I'm telling you as the spiritual leader of this congregation, this is the guy. I want you to show and acknowledge he's the leader, so the people will also follow and acknowledge that he is the leader. We can never forget the spiritual factor that goes into this role of pastor. Yes, we are hiring a man to do a job. But there is so much more to the role of pastor than just doing a job. This pastor will be the person we go to when we need prayer. This pastor will be the person we go to when we need guidance. This pastor will be the person we go to when things don't make sense and we need him to help us make it make sense. And thankfully for us, God has already chosen our next pastor. The final component is the nation of Israel, the people themselves. Joshua was already well known in the community. As we first see him in Exodus 17, he was already a military leader. As we see here, the next generation who would inherit the land probably heard stories of the spy Joshua who tried to bring the people to their right mind, to expel their fear, and to go take the land. The inauguration of Joshua's leadership was presented in a way to have the people acknowledge Joshua's leadership. We already see Moses. Moses had accepted his leadership because he understood what God was doing for the people. We see Eleazar, the spiritual leader, accept Joshua as the leader. And now with the people seeing Moses lay his hands on him and giving him his authority, the people can acknowledge Joshua's leadership. Towards the end of Deuteronomy, we will start to see a very common theme that's in throughout the book of Joshua and throughout the last few chapters of Deuteronomy. Moses tells Joshua to be strong and courageous. Moses encourages Joshua with a promise that God will go before him and will never leave him nor forsake him. Ministry is hard sometimes. Me and Lindsay talk about it a lot. No one knows how. It's kind of like being in a military family. You never know how hard it is unless you're actually in it. And I can say I've been in both, as a pastor and with my dad in the military. It's hard. As a church, we are asking someone to leave a life that they have established to come lead us, to come be our shepherd. And that is a daunting task. Tyler had to leave his life here to go lead. Yes, that is something pastors feel called to do, but we can't forget how daunting of a task that is to just uproot your life and move. It can be scary. Whoever God has chosen to be our next pastor will have to make many more sacrifices like this. Ministry's not a 9-to-5. You might have to call him in the middle of the night and say, please come help, and he would gladly do it. But you have to think of what that's going to do on him and his family, the sacrifices he'll have to make. We need to encourage this man, whoever God's chosen, reminding him to be strong and courageous. Throughout the ending of Deuteronomy and Joshua chapter 1, this phrase of to be strong and courageous appears 7 times. And as I tell my youth, if something's repeated, it's probably important. The fact that this phrase is repeated 7 times is probably telling us this is really, really, really important. God tells Joshua this 3 times. To be strong and courageous. As a leader, Joshua does not need to fear what is to come. Leading can be scary. Who's been in a leadership position? Show of hands. Leading can be scary. But God did not give us a spirit of fear. Joshua was probably scared and anxious because he's going to have some big shoes to fill, or sandals in their case. Because Moses was about to move on and be with his creator. But God continued to tell Joshua, do not fear, be strong and courageous. I now want to take a moment. We've talked about Joshua, but I now want to take a moment and look at Israel's reaction and how they process Moses' death. Once Moses passes in Deuteronomy 34, we're told that the nation of Israel mourned and grieved Moses for a month. And I'm here to tell y'all, it's okay to miss Tyler. As I mentioned, he was here serving faithfully for 5 years. He was more than just a leader to a lot of us. He was more than a pastor. He was family. He was a friend. He was a mentor. And I'm not going to lie, since me and Lindsay got back from our trip, I've noticed how things are different without him. I noticed that the first Sunday me and Lindsay got back. But Tyler felt God call him to go serve in Oklahoma, and he had to do what God called him to do and what he thought was right for his family. And that's okay. You are allowed to feel sad and to grieve and to mourn. The Israelites mourned for a month. They literally halted their travel to have a time of grieving. And that was okay. But look at what happens in Joshua 1, 16 and 17. Then they answered Joshua, whatever you commanded us, we will do, and whatever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will fully obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with us as he was with Moses. Because of that ceremony in Numbers 27, they were ready to accept Joshua's command. They had already acknowledged him as the next leader. And then for the 4th time, Joshua hears, only to be strong and courageous. But this time not from his mentor, not from his creator, but from the people he is serving. When the time came, Israel didn't just sit and mope around wishing things would go back to the things they were. They instead were ready to go and follow their next leader and take the promised land that God had promised them all those many years ago. So like the Israelites, we are currently going through a time of leadership change. When the new pastor comes, we have to be ready to follow him and be ready to willing. So how do we prepare our hearts for our new pastors? There are 4 points. I'll put the first two on this slide, and then later on I have the other 2 points. So God has already picked the next pastor for us, which that should give us joy. The hard part is finding that new pastor, which from the sounds of the search team, we have a pretty good candidate who I'm excited to meet and I'm excited to hear. We may not know who it is or for how long we will be without a pastor, but God is still in control. This new pastor may do things very differently from Tyler and lead us in a completely different direction than Tyler was leading us. That's okay. We just need to be ready and willing to follow his leadership. God is preparing our hearts for this new leader, and he is preparing our new pastor's heart and his family's heart for the change that's about to come. Because at the end of the day, yes, we're getting a new pastor, but our ultimate shepherd is still God. He is the one who is still in control. He is the one who is really leading us. He is just using the pastor as a tool to bring us closer to him. So how can we prepare our hearts for this change that is going to come? For starters, make sure this new pastor feels welcomed. One thing I am so grateful for was when Lindsay and I came here, all of you made us feel welcomed. You said hey to us, you talked to us, you got to know us, you took us out to lunch. It was a really, really good feeling to take up a leadership position knowing that I had a church that had my back. Do the same for this new pastor. When he gets here, get to know him. Develop that relationship with him. Take him out to lunch. See how you can serve him so that he will be more willing to serve you. And continue a welcoming and hospitable attitude for him, for the new pastor and his family. Like I said, I encourage you to invite him to lunch, get to know him, and develop a relationship with the new pastor and his family. The second thing, as I have up there, have confidence in our leader. Hebrews 13:17 says, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy and not a burden, for that would be no benefit to you. We need to trust in our leader and trust that he is doing what God has commanded us. We're also told to submit to their authority. Now, if he's doing something illegal, by all means, don't. Do not submit. But for the most part, he won't do anything illegal and won't ask you to do anything illegal. But submit to their authority. Why? As we see right there, because he keeps watch over us. Pastors are going to have to give an account for the flocks they shepherd. He watches over you because he cares. Pastors have this innate calling in their lives to serve. My calling is very different than his calling, but we acknowledge the calling God has placed in our lives. There's also another thing I think God does for pastors. He puts a sense of care and longing in their hearts. They want to help people. They want to make sure you're doing okay. They want to take care of you and watch over you. So that's the first reason why we need to have confidence in our pastors. The second thing is so that they will have joy in the work they are doing and not a burden. When a pastor is not treated well, his work becomes a burden, not just on the pastor, but on his family too. He feels drained, he feels burnt out, and even if he keeps persevering and thinking he's doing the right thing, he's still going to have that thought in his mind, am I doing enough? And that can be a huge weight on him and his family. But when a church follows the leadership, follows the pastor, has confidence in what they are doing, their work isn't work. It is a joy. I love what I do because I have the confidence of the parents to know that Jeb is teaching the youth exactly what they need. I have joy in my work because the youth enjoy listening to the things I have to teach them. I have joy in my work because y'all treat me well. The last part is, I think, the biggest part of this point. Yes, so that the pastor will have joy to our work, because if a pastor is burdened, it will not be a benefit to you. If a pastor is not treated well, if a pastor feels burdened in his work, we will quickly be without another senior pastor. Have confidence in his leadership so that his work will be a joy and it won't be burdensome. So, because that would not benefit you. The third thing we are to do, pray. Pray for our new pastor. Though we don't know who he is, God does. Pray for the new pastor and his family. Pray for the move to be smooth. RJ, if he becomes our new pastor, he will be moving from Search Team Michigan. Am I correct? Is that where? Yes. He will be moving from Michigan. That is a very long ways away from Middle Georgia. So pray that that goes smoothly for him and his family. Pray that this new pastor will follow God's direction, that he will lead us in the way God wants to be led and wants us to be led. Pray for him and his family when they get here. Continue to pray for them as they are here. Pastors have to make a lot of decisions. Sometimes a lot of really hard and tough decisions. Pray that God gives them the wisdom to make the correct decisions for us and for the church. And as always, pray for his ministry. As I mentioned, ministry is hard. Always pray for your leadership and your pastors. Lastly, we need to be strong and courageous and trust God and not fear. I mentioned earlier, be strong and courageous was mentioned 7 times throughout the ending of Deuteronomy and Joshua 1. We looked at 3 of those, 4 of those, 4 of those, which were for Joshua. The other 3 were for the nation of Israel. The people needed to be fearless and trust God. Trust the new leadership. God told the Israelites to trust him, though they were about to face the unknown. God wanted their trust. And so he told them 3 separate times, be strong and courageous. Today we're entering the unknown. Again, not knowing who our new pastor is, not knowing the direction the church will go when the new pastor comes, not knowing we'll be without a pastor. And we're not knowing what the future of our church is when the new pastor comes. But just as God told the Israelite community to trust in Joshua when he took the mantle of leadership, he's asking us to trust him too. God is still in control. God is still God. He knows what's best for us in our church. And he is not going to put someone in a position of leadership that would hurt us. He knows our next pastor, and he knows his heart. And he knows how this next pastor will lead us and which direction this church will go next. All we need to do is be strong and courageous and trust that God has a plan and trust our future pastor. As we close this morning, think about how you can help ready your hearts for our new pastor. Maybe it's just you just pray for him. Perfect. Pray for our new pastor and his family. Maybe it's praying for our search team. Do that so that they can also have wisdom to hear God's voice and have discernment on who our new pastor should be. Pray for me and Kevin and the elders as we are trying to lead you without our leadership so that we can lead y'all well until we get a new pastor. Maybe it's when the new pastor gets here, you have that hospitable, welcoming spirit so that the pastor and his family can feel loved and that they know that we want them here. I ask that you prepare your hearts and minds for this new pastor that we are going to have and be ready to follow and trust him with your spiritual care. It's going to take time to develop a relationship you have that you once had with Tyler, with this new person. Your relationship might be different with this new pastor than it was with Tyler. But let God work through you as he also works through this new pastor. Join me in prayer. Dear Jesus, thank you for this day and thank you for your many blessings. Thank you for being with us as we are in a time of unknown right now, as we are sheep without a shepherd. I pray that you be with the leadership who are here, be with me, Kevin, and the elders, as you help us lead this church until we find a new senior pastor. And I ask for our new senior pastor, Lord, whoever he may be, pray that you continue to work on his heart and his family's hearts as they're about to make a drastic life change. But Lord, we pray that when he gets here, his leadership will be one that helps us grow closer to you. I pray for this congregation as you also help them prepare their hearts for our new pastor as we accept the new role of leadership that is about to come. I ask that you help us all be ready to welcome this new pastor. Lord, thank you for your love, your grace, and your mercy. I pray that you bless our day, and let's have a good, restful Sunday. In your name I pray. Amen.